Welcome, everybody, to Redacted on this Wednesday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we beware the Ides of March. Can you believe it? It is the Ides of March.
Oh, yes.
And it is fortuitous. It is.
You think?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I think it's a little scary right now what's going on in the world. Because if you listen to these warmongers, they absolutely want us to drag into a war with Russia and China simultaneously. Look at all the Australian newspaper coverage this morning. Australia is basically saying we're about to go to war with China. But all the drone coverage, of course, what's been happening over the past 24 hours in Russia, you have a number of members of the Senate are now sending letters saying we need to send jet aircraft to Ukraine right now because we need to take on Russia directly. So we'll look at all the fallout around this drone collapse yesterday and what it portends on this Ides of March.
And you may not have noticed, but the West is in an energy crisis. The Biden administration broke a promise about new oil drilling. Environmentalists are freaking out. We're going to tell you whether or not that is just sort of religious fervor around climatism or whether or not it's actually the end of the world.
Yeah, just read the read the Wall Street Journal this morning. Little huge story, front page. It's like we are in a gas crisis right now, and it's going to only get worse. So we'll be looking at that. We're also going to look at why this could be 2008 all over again as it relates to the economy. You see the White House right now bailing out all of these banks instead of letting them fail, perhaps like they should have. This was the great lesson from 2008. They should have let them fail. They should have let them collapse. Instead, they got off scot-free with bailouts, but the Biden administration doesn't want you to call it a bailout. So all of that and more as Redacted starts right now. Welcome in everyone to all of our viewers on Rumble, on Twitter, on YouTube. We welcome you on this Wednesday evening. So great to see all of you. And again, we are broadcasting at 4 p.m. Eastern time while this daylight saving garbage is happening still with Europe. They're 2 weeks behind. They'll switch and all of that. But last night, I do want to apologize. We had a little glitch and it wasn't our fault. It was on YouTube's side going live when we started. Apparently, the first few minutes of our live stream was cut off on YouTube last night, but it was fine on Rumble. It was fine on Twitter. There was just some sort of a problem on YouTube's side. So it wasn't us. We just wanted to let you know that. We should mention we do have a daily newsletter, and you can sign up for it for free, totally free, if you go to redacted.inc, not .com. Go there and put in your email address, and you'll receive the newsletter about 6:30 a.m. Eastern time. And we try to cover about four or five stories that are pretty entertaining for you, that try to make you smile a little bit, but also cover some of the stories the mainstream media ignores. You have to verify your email, though. So once you get that verification email, just click OK, verify. And then tomorrow morning at about 6:30 Eastern time, you'll receive the newsletter. We publish that Monday through Friday, and Natalie does a lot of the great writing on it. And so someone, I saw an email today from a reader of the newsletter saying, I got the newsletter for the first time. I loved it. Natalie, great job.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I appreciate it. We work really hard on it together. Most of the funny quips and the headlines are Clayton's and the images and things like that. So keeps you informed, keeps you up to date. What's cool, what's hip, what's newsworthy. It's what's all trending. Of those things.
Yeah.
We try and keep a balance, though, between like celebrity news and like things that are just topical. Like my favorite story today was that 60% of Canadians could give a crap about the coronation.
The coronation?
yeah. About the coronation of the king and who's going and who's not, even though they are a commonwealth of Britain. They really
don't care about the king.
Yeah.
Do you guys care about the king? Let us know in the chat. Do you guys care about going to war and World War III? Because we do. We are anti-war on this show. So get ready for NATO to use this drone story as a reason to launch World War III with Russia. They will use any excuse that they can to launch a war against Russia. And according to TASS News, legendary journalist Seymour Hersh is reporting conversations that he's been having with the United States and NATO military officials that the the U.S. is getting ready for war with Russia if Russia makes major advances against the capital city of Kiev in Ukraine. Quoting from this report, and here's what Seymour Hersh is saying, the United States can intervene in the conflict in Ukraine with the prospect of Kiev's defeat. American journalist Seymour Hersh says, they tell me the game will be like this. This is NATO. We support NATO in offensive operations against the Russians, which will not deceive the world. It is we who are at war with the Russians, said Hersh, who has extensive connections in military circles and special services of the United States. In addition, the journalist, talking about the threat of a direct conflict between the United States and Russia on the basis of Washington's plans, according to his testimony, specifically mentioned the formations of the 82nd and 101st Airborne Divisions of the American Ground Forces. Can you guys believe this? Which are being transferred to Europe. We're talking about brigades, Seymour Hersh says, not battalions, but brigades. So Seymour Hersh saying, this is NATO. He's basically saying the game will be like this. This is NATO. We support NATO. If they're going to go in against Russia, we got to support them. So we can sort of pass the buck to NATO that it's not necessarily we that are at war with Russia. It's NATO, but we need to be supportive. We are going to send troops in that regard, according to Toss and what Seymour Hersh is saying.
I mean, how do we make the distinction anymore between NATO and the United States?
We don't.
It's,
is there any
United
daylight?
States Monday. No.
Yeah.
Money.
Well, that makes it no coincidence that Zelensky just said we need to go on the offensive. The U.S. needs to help us go on the offensive so that Russia understands that, you know, the United States will help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
He's been asking for this all the time. He's not been parsing words about the fact that he wants American weapons. He did say to Congress, we don't need American personnel, but they wouldn't say no.
Yeah, exactly. And we already know there are boots on the ground there already, you know, just not in the capacity that we're talking about here, because a brigade, just so we're clear, is made up of multiple battalions and has between 3,000 and 5,000 troops. So This would be significant. Now, these warmongers are working overtime right now, trying as hard as they can to bring about a world war. I'm going to show you some of that evidence in a moment. But first, overnight, we had some really troubling movements from the United States and allies towards Russia, all because a U.S. drone crashed over the Black Sea, basically right on Russia's doorstep. And I think Michael Tracy has the best hot take on this. If true, it's simply intolerable that Russian aircraft would have struck an American aircraft flying over the Gulf of Mexico. Oh, wait, wrong body of water. Right?
Yeah, I mean, it's like you have something on someone else's property and then you shoot it down. They're like, how rude of you to not let me in there.
Wait, we're literally flying drones at the Russian border over Crimea, right up to their door. What do you think is going to happen? Even if this craft, we don't know what's the circumstances fully of this craft, but eventually something's going to happen.
That's why the United States rhetoric is calling this unprofessional. Like, that's rude.
That's
it's basically just
happened.
Rude.
It's unprofessional.
And this is just our MO. I mean, we're at the South China Sea. It's like, and we have the audacity. If they're like, we're like, hey, they told us, they tried to box us out of the South China Sea. They tried to do this. It's like, it's offensive to us, but yet it's not offensive to them that we're there, that we use these intimidation tactics all over the world.
Yeah, exactly. So I love this idea that if it was in the Gulf of Mexico, what would happen, right? Of course, this would happen. Think about our response to a balloon, right? A Chinese balloon. Then NASA said, no, it was ours. And that, think about that. We're shooting down a Chinese balloon, a balloon invasion, shoot it down.
Well, the U.S., you know, in that case, acted unprofessionally.
Yeah. They shot a balloon down over our airspace.
It was inappropriate and unsafe and unprofessional.
Right.
That was unsafe and unprofessional.
And now we're doing the exact same thing, and we're surprised that they're doing the same thing. We're surprised about this. So members of the deep state are calling on NATO and the U.S. to increase its troop presence along the Russian border. So this is Mick Mulroy, a former senior Pentagon official. He said that the U.S. must make sure Russia understands it cannot bring down U.S. unmanned assets with impunity. If the U.S. were to not fly in that airspace, we would be ceding that airspace, he said. We must increase our presence now to ensure that Russians do not benefit from this unlawful act.
Okay, that's very intrusive.
Yeah, if the U.S. were not to fly in that airspace, we would be ceding that space. So we must increase our presence there. We
By
must
that
send
argument,
more
we must be everywhere.
Well, we are.
Because if you're not everywhere, you cede it to somebody else. That's the same argument being used for space.
Well, and the Arctic, right, yeah, space, the Arctic. I mean, again, this is why we should be concerned. You have a former Pentagon official saying we must increase our presence now to ensure that Russians do not benefit from this unlawful act. Last night, warmonger-in-chief Sean Hannity opened his show by calling on President Biden to launch World War III against Putin. Watch.
Russia and Putin's hostility and aggression against our country, the United States, has now reached a dangerous new height. Now, tonight, the question is this. What will your President Joe Biden do? Is he going to offer maybe another waiver for the Nord Stream 2 pipeline? Put more sanctions in place? Putin's not going to care because he's selling his energy and getting filthy rich. He's selling it to China, the rest of the world. And all of this comes as a new axis of evil is emerging between these three top geopolitical foes. China's dictator Xi is now scheduled to hold a very rare but significant meeting with Putin in Moscow. So how much you want to bet they'll probably be trading jokes about just how pathetically weak America's president is? This is beyond embarrassing. This is danger. Danger to the safety and security of the entire world. America's enemies are on the move. They are aggressive. They are consolidating power. They're creating partnerships and alliances that the world better take note of while Joe Biden, your president, is asleep at the wheel. Russia and Putin took out an American drone over international waters. And I ask again, Joe Biden, what are you going to do?
Yeah, what are you going to do? Go to war with Russia. Russia's aggression.
You know, I was just going to say how irritating it is. It's like you have CNN, MSNBC, they're never critical of Biden unless it comes to war. It's like if you want to see the media get behind a narrative, they love war. They all come out to call for war. But then they're critical, not critical about other things that Biden does. It's just crazy.
Yeah, this is where they're united in this, of course. Mm-hmm. So Russia's aggression against our country. Sorry, I missed that part. Sorry, I missed that part, Sean. Russia's aggression against our country?
Well, he said they're poking fun. That's aggressive. In this, the United States loves microaggression. And, microaggression is a cause for total societal change. And so if they're poking fun, that's an aggressive. That's a very leftist stance. I'm surprised that Sean Hannity would take it.
Yeah, I'm sorry that I missed the part where Russia blew up our pipeline. And where Russia sent tanks to Canada to invade or provoke us into a war. Like, I'm sorry where that happened. Maybe I missed that part.
The worst thing that I've seen Russia do, if it is true, I saw it on Twitter, is use Biden in the dementia ad campaign. Like, that's about the worst thing I've seen them
again
publicly do.
Microaggressions.
Yeah, these are passive-aggressive aggressions. So CNN is in on the game, too, calling it unintended escalation. When you fly drones on the border with Russia, that's not unintended. Watch.
Admiral Kirby, the U.S. Air Force characterized this move today, quote, as aggressive actions by Russia. They said it could lead to, quote, unintended escalation. That's some strong language if this was just a misunderstanding. What kind of escalation?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think Natasha covered it. I mean, somebody could have gotten hurt. Nobody wants to see that happen. And it could lead to miscalculations between, two militaries that are operating not obviously in Ukraine together, but certainly in proximity in the region. And we don't want to see this war escalate beyond what it already has done to the Ukrainian people. And so this was inappropriate, unsafe, unprofessional conduct by the Russian pilots.
Somebody could have gotten hurt on an unmanned drone because maybe it could have hit a landmass. Sure, but are we concerned about Russian pilots? That's what we're doing now?
No. Kirby also said that we haven't recovered the drone just yet, but we have a team there that's making sure Russia won't get it. Okay. Here's an idea. Why not send the same team that blew up the Nord Stream pipeline? And they're good at deep sea diving. Mm. They can go down and fish it out.
How can you do that? Go there and make sure they don't get it?
I don't know.
Didn't we have the exact same narrative play out in Iran where they shot a drone down and then they were like, oh, we can't let them have it. And then they got it and they're like inspecting it, and it was on the news. And like, they're inspecting our drone. They're going to find out the technology. And it was like, this was a big narrative for months on like CNN.
Yeah, exactly. And meanwhile, you have Senator Lindsey Graham calling for regime change and removing Putin. This is the guy that's been calling for this now for months. Now, he throws a whole bunch of spaghetti on the wall, hoping at least one of these wars that he wants will work for us so that we can push the United States further into this world war. Watch him last night as well, pushing for this.
So, President Biden, you're the Rodney Dangerfield of world leaders. Nobody respects you. And if you don't change your game and up your game, we're going to have World War III. Here's the next war that's coming. Israel is going to have to take military action to stop the Iranians from developing enriched uranium to the point it can become a weapon. They're at 84%. All they have to do is get to 90%. And we're not doing a damn thing about the Iranians trying to develop a nuclear bomb under our plain sight.
I would like to know, we know that Russian drones are flying over Ukraine.
Yeah.
Why don't we shoot down two of theirs and send a message? You shoot down one of ours, we'll shoot down two the first time, 10 the next time.
We're being walked on, we're being crapped on, and we're about to have a major war because China is sizing up Biden, and they're going to go into Taiwan if we don't up our game in Ukraine. Biden's always late to the game.
He's
late to give them tanks.
Senator. Mark my words, he wouldn't lift a finger.
Number one, if Putin gets away with this, there goes Taiwan. The two are connected. So the administration, the Biden administration, it's been slow and weak. Every time Ukraine needs a weapon system, we have to beg to get it. So I'm all in to win it. And you're not going to win this war by bleeding Ukraine dry and giving them weapons they need too late to affect the outcome on the battlefield. So Joe Biden's a disaster on the foreign policy front. We're in free fall. I've never been more worried about world stability than I am right now.
You're doing a lot to help that world stability, by the way.
Right. I am really buying this aggressive big stick masculinity.
So we need to help Israel. That's one thing we need to do. Then we also need to destroy Putin. That's the next thing we need to do. We need to destroy China. That's the other thing. And if we don't,
and invade Mexico.
He's like, they're all connected here.
And if we have some extra time, we can take a look at Argentina later. They're getting a little independent down there. We don't like that.
Yeah, we're going to try to undermine them.
We'll work on that later.
So he's
Antony Blinken's in Africa this week. We'll see, you know, if we can pick on anybody there.
Yeah. So he's been pushing for war against Russia since 2017. Here he is in Ukraine telling them that we're going on the offensive. This is 2017. We're going to go provoking Russia. We will arm you. We will send you billions of dollars in weapons. When we get back to Washington, we're going on the offensive. Watch.
I admire the fact that you will fight for your homeland. Your fight is our fight. 2017 will be the year of offense. All of us will go back to Washington and we will push the case against Russia.
So then he went on a little Twitter tirade last night. Remember, he's a senator with a lot of power. And he went on a Twitter tirade last night saying the Ukrainians are fighting like tigers and can win with American weapons support. They are not asking for boots on the ground. And by the way, he's friends with Biden. Now, he calls him publicly a disaster, but he's friends with him. So he knows the game they're playing. He can sort of play good cop, bad cop, I guess, and get more weapons for Ukraine. But he's saying they are not asking for boots on the ground in Ukraine. What? That's a bald-faced lie. Ukraine has been asking for troops for almost a decade now and pushing for it. In fact, during that 2017 meeting we just showed you, Ukraine asked for troops. That was one of the things they were discussing. So the idea that they don't want boots on the ground is a canard. It's laughable. So I don't know what the hell he's even smoking.
No, it's a spin. But they've been saying it all along. We just want the weapons. We don't want soldiers. That's what Zelensky said to Congress. We don't need you to show us how to use this stuff as if it's a self-explanatory toaster.
Right.
We can do it ourselves. Just send the stuff.
Just send us the jets. We don't need any training.
Yeah.
We've got some guys. We've got Dimitri over here who can jump into one of these American jets and fly it.
As
he's
if
fine.
It's the Matrix. Yeah, just like, I need a pilot program.
Yeah, he played Afterburner in the arcade, so he knows how to fly this thing.
When you send the jets, could you just like leave the pilots inside them when you're shipping them?
Just pack them up. Make sure there's a little meal
and
in there.
Some packing peanuts.
So then he went on to say, when American leaders tell an adversary that they will not do in a conflict, it sends a signal of weakness and generally prolongs the conflict, making it more likely to spread. Then he says, we had 8 years of Obama sending mixed signals to our enemies that led to more aggression. We do not need to go down that path again.
Wrong. Really? Obama actually dropped more drones on people than
bombs,
any other. Drone bombing in Syria started under Obama. A lot of people died under the Obama administration.
And he sent 30,000 additional troops to Afghanistan, Obama did. For America's security, Obama said. 30,000 Americans? Like, that's a mixed signal?
And I mean, a lot of people just missed it because Obama was cool and fist bumping people, but he was also very busy bombing brown people.
Smoking cigarettes and playing basketball. He's the cool president. Don't look over here while he's meanwhile sending 30,000 Americans to die. Go ahead.
Well, and Bush started the drone program, and then Obama came in as the peace candidate. I mean, a big reason he won is because he was the peace candidate. He won the Nobel Peace Prize. And then he came in and increased the drone program by 400%.
Yeah, he did worse. He increased, I mean, it's unbelievable. He wins a Nobel Peace Prize. These people run on a Bernie Sanders, they run on a platform of peace, Hillary Clinton on a platform of peace, Obama on a platform of peace, and they do the exact opposite. They vote for war, they do the exact opposite when they're in power.
Yes.
So attack Russia right now. That's the message you're hearing from Congress. Of course, these are the same warmongers, the same ones calling for us to launch attacks against Russia after a missile went into Poland. You remember that a few months ago. Turns out it was Ukraine that fired that missile, but who cares, right? Doesn't really matter. It's any kind of false flag that we can use to justify a war, a drone, a missile into Poland. Who cares? We need to figure something out so we can launch a war against Russia. Right now, a Russian jet, doesn't matter. The official line right now, On all of this, and has anyone even stopped to ask the question about this drone that was actually struck down by a Russian jet? Like, we've moved past the point of even caring, like, how it came down. We're just like, oh, yeah, Russia shot it down, so we need to go to war.
But this is not what Russia said about it.
Right, so let's actually, like, unpack a little bit of this drone going down, and did Russia shoot it down? According to the Pentagon, the Pentagon says the official line from Washington is that a Russian jet clipped the propeller of this drone with its tail fin. Okay, so get this. A Russian jet swoops by and clips it, and that causes the drone to go down.
Well, they also, you missed the part about how they first doused it in fuel.
Oh, I'm
getting
to that.
And then clipped. Okay, all right.
Well,
you get to that.
No, CBS will get to it because they made a whole graphic. It's like they had a whole graphic and movie produced within minutes. It's amazing how CBS, which is a mouthpiece of the intelligence state, somehow managed to have an entire graphic ready to go to explain how Russia took this drone down. Watch.
But never like what happened today. A Russian jet approached from the rear, dumping fuel. U.S. officials believe it meant to come up in front of the drone so it would fly into the fuel cloud, but pulled up too soon and clipped the drone's propeller, which is located in the rear. The drone's controllers could do nothing but let it glide into the sea. For more than half an hour, two Russian jets made a total of 19 passes on the unarmed drone, popping up in front to blast it with their jet exhaust and trying to drench it with fuel. On the final pass, the Russian pilot missed his approach. Just bad piloting, one official said.
Okay.
They're bad pilots.
Okay. I love this.
Now we're hitting below the belt.
So CBS, first of all,
things are closer than they appear.
Right.
In the mirror.
I can't. It's not bad piloting.
It's that fuzzy dice in my rear view mirror.
It's that one. It's that one-eyed patch pilot. Did one-eyed Dimitri go flying again for
Patches
us?
Patches McCoolahan or whatever.
Come on, Maverick. So really, that's what happened here? Okay, maybe. Right, maybe. We'll take the Pentagon's word for this. But what happens if a Russian jet hits a drone midair going that fast? Do you think it's just like a flesh wound?
It's just
a flesh wound. Yeah. I'm sorry. What Russian is going to put their jet in that type of harm's way? That's You ever see a midair collision, even a clipping of a midair collision? It doesn't end well. So you mean to tell me that a Russian jet just nudged a drone mm-hmm. in midair and knocked its propeller off, and the Russian jet is fine and the pilot is fine? I mean, the whole thing stinks to me.
Well, yeah, because think about the difference really quick in speed. Those drones don't go anywhere near as fast as a jet. They're not jet propelled.
Right. I mean, yeah, they're propeller propelled. Right.
So that would have to be a slow moving object mixed with a very fast moving object.
Right. Yeah. Right. And nothing happens to this Russian jet. It's just bad piloting. Okay. Right. These guys patrol these waters every day nonstop. Do you think for a second that this is what happened? I don't. But maybe it did. Do you guys believe the Pentagon? Let me know in the chat below, or CBS News, that this is how it happened, right?
Well, we should read the Russian statement of what happened.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, so the Russian statement said that as a result of sharp maneuvers around 9:30 a.m. Moscow time, the MQ-9 unmanned aerial vehicle went into an uncontrolled flight, lost altitude, and collided with the water surface. The Russian fighters did not use weapons, did not come into contact with the UAV, and returned safely to their home base. So it would seem, if their explanation holds any water, that they realized, that the remote pilot realized they were being tracked by jets, tried to sort of get away from them by sharp maneuvers, and lost control of the drone.
Yeah, and also, according to Russia, the transponders were turned off on the drone. So it's basically its ability to maneuver was turned off, right? Its ability to connect and actually communicate was turned off. So then this thing goes in the water. But Russia says none of our jets were hurt in this. And you guys were caught red-handed and crashed into the water. And now you're blaming it on us? Nord Stream pipeline.
And think about, like you're saying, If a plane hits something, like a bird can literally take a plane down.
Yeah,
like,
great point.
It happens all the time. So if they're not going to be like, oh, that'll buff out, you know, like they get back to the plane, the landing site or whatever, we could just buff that right out. No, that would damage that plane. They're aluminum.
$26 million planes? Like, you mean to tell me they're going to just take a risk in like tapping its propeller? You know, like we're going up and some kind of a cartoon where I'm just going to tap my wing against your wing and like say hello to you. Like, that doesn't happen. Like, that's not going to happen. So anyway, in all of this, it's crazy. So as a result of this downing of this craft, of course, the Senate is jumping into alarm mode. We heard from Lindsey Graham, but today the United States Senate sent a letter to the president, or to Lloyd Austin, with these senators signing their names to this laundry list of requests to send jet aircraft to Ukraine. Because of this, because the United States has had aircraft now or drones shot down by Russia, we need to snap to attention. They immediately had this letter ready to go. It's kind of amazing. And these are the senators: Mark Kelly, Tim Kaine, Lisa Murkowski,
Tammy Duckworth, Tommy Tuberville, Jackie Rosen.
Yeah,
Martin Heinrich.
So this is definitely a bipartisan.
This is not a great graphic, Clayton. You lectured me about not doing graphics like this today.
Well, it's the document is so large. I couldn't do anything else with it. I know. Actually, when I was clipping this, I was like, this is like a Natalie graphic. You can't read it.
We got in an argument this morning about how to graphically present things to you, because sometimes I put too much in a small space, and so. I took the lecture and then he went into
this. This is a Natalie graphic, but I just wanted you to see the signatures. That's really all I care
Thank
about.
You.
The signatures of these senators. I didn't ask you to read this. So anyway, yeah, the United States wants jets sent right now to Ukraine. On top of that, Poland is sending jets, not to be outdone, says this morning that it may send its MiG-29 fighters jets in 4 to 6 weeks now because of what's going on here. Polish Prime Minister says that Warsaw could give Ukraine Soviet-made MiG-29 fighter jets within 4 to 6 weeks. That would be a significant escalation in NATO support, according to Dave DeCamp. Yeah, so let's do this.
I guess Poland's over the whole missile in the farm
field.
We're going
to talk about Poland when we get to the Pfizer documents, because did you know that Poland has declared a force majeure in order to not pay for or receive any more COVID vaccines?
No.
Yes. And so Poland is saying, because we have a refugee crisis, because we are so overwhelmed by the current conflict, They declared this last May. It's been almost a year that they have said, please, no more COVID vaccines, and we will not be paying you. And that's being litigated in court. So when we later today, in our last segment, talk about the COVID vaccines that the European Union is arguing about paying for and receiving, and at the same time, the mainstream media is telling you Poland's fine. They want this conflict. They support Ukraine. They're not hurting at all. That's false, because both things can't be true. They cannot declare a force majeure over the conflict and also be fine.
Yeah. Well, we know, we've been covering Poland on this show for a while now, and they are not fine.
They are not fine.
So we got to find this drone. And if they say that they're circling over this drone to find this right now, they better find it soon before Putin fishes it out of the sea, because you know how good he is, like, fishing stuff out of the sea.
Oh, yes.
We got exclusive photos already. Like, he pulled up another one of our drones.
Well, when he's going down in that bubble to, blow up pipelines.
That submarine, when he's going down to blow up more pipelines. By the way, did you see he announced yesterday that they found another bomb on the Nord Stream pipeline? Putin announced they found another bomb 30 kilometers from where the major explosion was. They're asking Denmark now. It's unblown up. So it's not exploded.
Might have some
they're
reconnaissance.
They say, we'd like to investigate it. We're asking the Danish authorities or Denmark on this. Like, hey, but actually we would like an international team to go look at it. We don't even want to be the ones to look at it. So go down and we'll get some real answers on this unexploded one that's 30 kilometers further away from where they planted the other ones.
Interesting.
Get in your little submersible, Putin, or get your fishing rod out.
All right.
More news to come to here on this Wednesday.
We're going to talk about the energy crisis and the expanding of oil drilling in Alaska that Biden promised he would not do. Why did he need to break that promise, or did he? We're also going to talk about the bank fallout, and we're going to tell you more about Pfizer's contracts with Europe and how European nations are saying, we don't want this deal anymore. What can we do to get out of it?
Yeah, exactly. So all of that. But first, I want to tell you about our friends over at Fast Growing Trees. Now is the time to get some beautiful trees, plants planted in your yard. And I love these guys. FastGrowingTrees.com. They will deliver trees and shrubs and whatever you want right to your door based on your own climate. So what's cool is you go to the website and you put in information about your zip code, your area, and it based on your climate and your neck of the woods, it will provide you with exact foliage that works in your backyard. So if you go to fastgrowingtrees.com/redacted, you get 15% off your entire order. And they have plant experts that will curate thousands of easy to grow plants, shrubs, tree varieties for your unique climate. If you want like lemons or evergreens, it doesn't matter. Everything in between based on your climate. Happy plants, happy home, right? But sometimes it's hard to know exactly which plants will do best. There's a lot of people that will buy certain plants and they die almost immediately. No problem here, because fastgrowingtrees.com will actually get you customized recommendations based on your specific needs. So they've got great plant experts on their team. We used them and ordered a Japanese maple for this spot in our front yard. And it was gorgeous. It was absolutely gorgeous. They delivered it in a beautiful setup, able to plant it, and it just beautiful, and it grew fantastically. So huge fans of these guys. Join over 1.5 million happy Fast Growing Trees customers. Go to fastgrowingtrees.com/redacted now to get 15% off your entire order. So if you've been thinking about planting a fruit tree or a new hedge or a boxwood or something like that, check them out, get that discount, and they'll deliver it right to your door, so you don't have to put it in your trunk, where you always get the soil all over your back of your trunk all the time, mm-hmm. and then you've got to get the vacuum out and do that. Check them out right now. Go to fastgrowingtrees.com/redacted. Get 15% off your entire order. Get 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com/redacted.
All right. Well, President Biden lied when he said that he would not approve any new oil and gas drilling, but of course he did. You could argue that he did it because we are in an energy crisis, although I would argue that he never meant it in the first place, and it was naive to believe that. But many of his supporters are feeling betrayed by this.
Yeah, because he stood up there on the campaign trail when, like, young girls asked him, like, Mr. President or Mr., you know, candidate, Mr. Vice President, you're running for office to win our vote. Can you tell us that there will be no more drilling in the Gulf of Mexico?
Well, we have tape of it, actually. Here is Biden in a debate saying that there would be no further oil and gas permits if he is elected.
Number one. No more subsidies for fossil fuel industry. No more drilling on federal lands. No more drilling, including offshore. No ability for the oil industry to continue to drill, period. Ends. Number one.
Okay. So that's not true because over the weekend, the Biden administration announced that they have approved drilling in Alaska called the Willow Project. The administration was bracing for some backlash here by announcing this, and the way that they sort of couched it in order to not get back blowback is by calling it a reduction in approval. So here's the announcement from the U.S. Department of the Interior. They're saying they substantially reduced the scope of the Willow Project. They didn't say we approved it. They're saying we approved 60% of it, meaning we reduced it by 40%. But really, they approved it. They approved 3 out of 5 new drilling projects. Yes, we approved it, but less. The drill sites will be leased to ConocoPhillips. And again, 2 of the 5 were denied. Now, environmentalists are screaming bloody murder about this because of the, you know, emissions and the promise and all of that. Here is AOC posturing on about this, saying the Willow Project has been estimated to produce 287 million tons of carbon dioxide. We're going to get to that number in a minute. The equivalent of 76 coal plants. And the cause of nearly $20 billion in climate change-related damages. The only acceptable Willow Project is no Willow Project. So she's saying 3 out of 5 is unacceptable. It needs to be 0 out of 5. She does well to yell about the environment because she failed us on her promise to advocate for peace. So yes, she should stick with this one because it's easy to champion the environment as a smokescreen. So you go ahead with that. But dozens of organizations in Alaska, including environmental organizations, support this. Here is a collection of letters in support of this project. And I think it's important to consider them because these are the people who live in the region. They should get a more weighted vote, I believe. And we should avoid boiling these issues down to black and white because fossil fuel use is very gray. We've talked about this before. For instance, is it better to import this energy and this fuel or to drill it ourselves and boost local economies while so doing? Don't say it's better to not use it at all. I don't want to hear that as a viable option. I especially don't want to hear that from people who have Ring doorbells and plug in toothbrushes. So let me just scroll through the names of organizations that support this. You can find this yourself on Senator Lisa Murkowski's Senate page. She's a Democratic senator from Alaska that has championed this project. And I just sort of scrolled through some of these because she's collected all of these associations saying, we want this project and we want it now. So what are they saying? They're saying that they want prosperity. Go ahead.
She's a Republican, just be clear.
Oh, I'm sorry. But yes, I misspoke. They're saying they want prosperity in their region and that they think that this will bring them prosperity. This will bring about jobs. This will boost their economy. Again, it's short-sighted of anyone to scream about denying that without considering what they're saying. Here's one example. The mayor of North Slope, which is the town smack dab in that area where these projects will occur, he says, and the point of telling this history, which he, you know, talks about how there's so many indigenous people that live in this region. He says the North Slope oil and gas resources literally come from our backyard. The development of those resources had an overall profound positive impact on our communities for 50 years. We don't have urban sprawl or malls or factories, and we don't want them. But we do want to ensure that our people continue to derive benefit from our land's natural resources to sustain our communities and enable our participation in a modern economy. Revenue from oil and gas development has been invested and will continue to be invested in the immediate and long-term survival of our communities. It is fundamental to our economic survival. May not always be that way, but it is certainly true today. And in fact, last year, the Biden administration sort of kicked the can down the road about this project by expanding the amount of time that Congress had to respond to the project. And local officials objected to that expansion, saying we don't need outsider influence on this. We don't need Congress to ring in on it anymore. We want this now. Here is the local indigenous group's objection to that just last summer, saying the requested extension would provide no additional benefit in terms of informal environmental review for the project and would serve no purpose other than attempting to delay the project beyond the point of economic feasibility to the detriment of the Alaskan people who call this region home, the Alaskan Native people, he says. I can show you these all day. I went through dozens of these letters of people in this region saying, yes, please bring this here. Don't let Congress grandstand on it any longer. We want this and we want it now because we believe it'll bring prosperity to our region. But I can also show you dozens of videos and tweets of liberals crying in their coffee about it because of the environment.
Well, then they always cry about it in areas that don't affect them.
Absolutely. To which I say, do you know what local wildlife would be disrupted? Do you know that?
Right.
Or are you saying that because that's a media talking point? Because Michael Schellenberger points out that when drilling projects went into the Congo, here's from his great book, Apocalypse Never, the Wildlife Conservation Society, Alistair McNeilage, said that oil drilling has occurred with surprisingly little impact in those regions. He says you can find a level of disturbance. Animals will tend to move away from the immediate area of any areas of operation, but it's not a large disturbance at the level of the park as a whole if the community takes precautions to minimize impact, which these communities in Alaska have laid out that they have done in their letters, if you bother to read them.
The companies, yeah.
The communities. Oh. They've done land use surveys. They've done, you know, they have conservation efforts to make a minimal impact on the local ecosystem. Well, it has been done.
And Schellenberger points out in his book that the footprint of these things is relatively small.
Yes, we're going to talk about that. In fact, even though the media is saying that, you know, this will impact the ecosystem. Here's CBS again echoing what AOEC says, that this is going to produce an estimated 278 million tons of greenhouse gases over the course of 30 years, which is approximately the same as 2 million cars would generate over the same period. But this is doing math in a vacuum because it doesn't account for the oil we will not ship from South America, the Middle East, Russia, perhaps. It does not account for the fact that when communities become wealthier, such as the communities in Alaska that we're talking about, their carbon footprints go down because of innovation in those regions. That's provable, that anytime you raise the sort of average wealth of a community, they say, stop using as many single-use things, they stop cooking on
cow dung.
Right, things like that that cause right. more emissions. There's all sorts of data around that. It does not account for the reduction in land that we would need for alternative energy. Go ahead.
Yeah, and it also doesn't account for the fact that when you go crazy about reducing CO2 emissions, people die. So in the opposite is true. Like, oh, we want to reduce CO2 emissions, right? So the move to get rid of CO2 emissions, that is, you get rid of fossil fuels, you turn off heating for homes, you make inaccessible cooking sources, right? You make inaccessible all these forms of energy, and people die as a result of it.
Yes.
That's where you have a catastrophe.
And then as long as we're talking about land and land mass, another data point that Michael Schellenberger brings out, he says, centralizing energy production has been essential to leaving more of planet Earth for natural landscapes than with wild animals. Excuse me. Yeah, he says today, all hydroelectric dams, all fossil fuel production, and all nuclear plants require less than 0.2% of the Earth's ice-free land. In contrast, the Earth's food production takes 200 times more land than this. So if we're really worried about land mass, we need to stop eating industrially produced food.
Yeah, or stop going to your Whole Foods, because as he points out, like the Whole Foods, like stuff you're getting from Whole Foods, the amount of land needed for your vegan whatever, or, you know, takes up incredible amounts of
right.
land.
Well, for instance, if you're going to only eat grass-fed beef, that takes up like in Argentina, for instance, when they went to industrially produced meat, they were able to save something like 97% of the farmland they were using. So if we're really going to be yelling about land, we have to take all of this into account, mostly food.
Right.
Much yeah. less and than when you, oil and gas.
When you clear a field, as he also points out in the book, you're uprooting all sorts of small little wildlife creatures. Like you think, we just think about like baboons or whatever.
Or cows. We're saving cows. But then when you're eating, especially like a vegetarian-based diet is responsible for a lot of destruction of animals
but
because
they don't
of farmland.
That. Don't tell the people that go to Whole Foods about
rabbits,
that.
Rabbits. Yeah. It, yeah you know, mice, all of that kind of stuff. Now, if you're saying, well, then we just shouldn't use this type of fuel, instead we should shift to renewables, then you also cannot talk about land use, because look at this calculation, again, from Apocalypse Never. If the United States were to try to generate all of the energy it uses with renewables, we're talking about solar and wind, then 25 to 50% of all land in the U.S. would be required. So if you think that you can live your life with solar panels, then clear out everything you see, or at least half of what you can see right now, in order to lay out those wind and solar farms. By contrast, today, our energy system requires just 0.5% of land in the United States. If that doesn't make your jaw drop, I don't know, maybe you're not paying attention or you're innumerate, because that really surprised me, that statistic. So is fossil fuel the most desirable type of energy? No, in my opinion. We've spoken a lot about nuclear. I think that's the best option we've got right now.
By far.
But we've covered why that's not happening in the United States. So could it be that you're whining on Twitter about fossil fuels because you haven't done your homework? Or are you arguing for the continued impoverishment of indigenous people by yelling about the Willow Project on Twitter? That this is a possibility. In related news, though, a recent Rasmussen poll found that 60% of Americans agree that climate change rhetoric has become a religion and actually has nothing to do with the climate. This rings true if you follow the hashtag Willow Project, with people just sort of talking in a vacuum about why that's bad. But nevertheless, we've talked to you about how these numbers are not just a black and white thing to talk about on Twitter.
I love the Gateway Pundit's graphic here. How dare you? How dare you that these 60% of Americans believe climate change is a religion?
Right, because I think we're not talking about that as a positive thing. We're talking about the way that some people are unable to be critical about religion.
Well, also think of these rich people in like Connecticut or something that are like, yeah, we definitely, you know, we really want to move towards solar and wind. Okay, so we'll put some wind farms in your backyard.
In your backyard, right.
No, you can't do that. You can't put them in my backyard, because on my way to the Whole Foods, when I stop at the kids' soccer game, I don't want to be hearing the droning sound of wind, you know? I want to be able to see the birds, the seabirds and things like that, and I don't want to hear that constant humming. Put it in poor communities.
Kill birds there.
Right.
Yeah, that's fine. They can see that. That's what they call NIMBYs, is not in my backyards.
Right.
And NIMBYs are more powerful voters than YIMBYs, which are people who are saying yes in my backyard. YIMBYs are not as powerful as a like immobilized votership than NIMBYs.
Well, and the people in Alaska are saying yes in my backyard. Yes, bring jobs.
They are YIMBYs. I mean, you're right.
I mean, look at Texas,
and they
right?
stand for it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look at Texas drilling, and look what you know. Why do people move to Texas? Not just because of the oil industry, but because of the jobs. But are people moving to Texas, and they're so worried about the oil industry that they environmentally that they're moving hundreds of miles away from any kind of like drilling? You know, what do they call derricks? What are they called? The big things that go in the ground?
The things that are in the opening of Dallas.
I call them dinosaurs.
That they looked like, as a kid, I was like, what are those things? You know, I always wanted to build those things. They just like bounce up and down all day, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The oil derricks? Yeah, I was right. Okay, oil derricks. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So are they such an environmental concern that the people don't live within hundreds of miles of an oil derrick?
I don't know.
Let us know from Texas. Like, I think people live near them. I think people live nearby. Like, I don't think it's that much of a concern, but
I don't know if the tropes are to believe they're like eight
live
in George Bush's backyard.
Right. But I don't want to live by a wind farm.
No,
not in my backyard.
Okay.
I don't want to be sitting here reading a book and enjoying my coffee on a Saturday morning and then hearing whoomp, 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 whoomp. And then another bird goes.
Yes, yep, and
there's another bald eagle.
There was an article recently in a major publication. I can't remember if it was New York Times or something like that, about how people are getting hurt because they fall. Like the wind propellers have sometimes unprovokedly fallen out of the sky, and people are afraid to get hurt by them. So in that case, yeah, I'm an NIMBY too.
You're just walking along. I usually walk the dog in the wind farm, but I never know if a propeller is going to kill my dog.
Here lies Natalie. I got hit by a ukulele out of the other day. With my luck, I should not test.
Yeah, do not walk near a wind farm. A propeller can just fall off. And the other thing, of course, the wind farms is they don't know how to recycle them. So these propellers that are now defunct, they lay in a field. Yeah. We've shown you videos of these wind farms. They don't have a way to recycle these giant.
Yeah, they're made of fiberglass.
Oh, yeah. So turn them into Corvettes or something. I don't know. What are you going to do with them?
Yeah. But
there's nothing you can do about these things.
I don't know. Oh, what is that book? Thursday Murder Club, where she goes to visit her daughter. It's like Thursday Murder Club is such a funny book. You guys read it. And it's this elderly woman, and she goes to visit her daughter at a conference room, and she's like, their conference table is made of an old airplane wing. Isn't that fun? And
that's what Yeah, she's like, man, that's so cool. Like,
things these days.
These kids these days with their modern things. Yeah, you could take it. That's what they could do.
Yeah.
Take a conference room. You could take a whole conference room, take one of these wind turbine wings and put it as a conference table.
Yeah.
Like, you know what you guys are sitting your coffee on right now? This is an old wind turbine wing.
You do realize how big those things are, right? Like, people walk inside of them. They're huge. Yeah. That'd
be a big conference.
You'd have to have like a 40-foot conference room.
It's like in 1989 Batman when he's like, can you pass the salt? And he's sitting at the other end of the table.
That's the dining table.
Vicki Vale.
Yeah.
All right, we've got more news to get to here on your Wednesday. Get your coffee, get your water. We're going to talk about the banks and what this portends for your finances. Is it 2008 all over again? Peter Schiff saying we are now in the 2023 recession. It is here. This is what this looks like. We're seeing it spreading to Europe this morning, of course. Credit Suisse also on the verge of collapse, perhaps. And Europe is a different animal than what's happening in the United States. The United States is stepping in and bailing out these banks. What is Europe doing? So we're going to look at that. Plus, we're also going to look at these Pfizer documents.
And how the European Union is saying, we're getting a bum deal. We don't want to keep paying for this.
Mm.
We are overcharged.
Oh, Pfizer.
Like, you know, you go to Europe and you overpay for a leather coat. It's like that.
So more on that in a second. But first, right now, I mean, why is gold up 2% already in the past few days? There's a reason for it. People want safety. So Natalie and I just made a huge investment in gold over the past couple of weeks because we saw what's coming, guys. We've been warning you on this show about what's coming. So we are putting, of course, this is our personal decision. You can, you know, your mileage may vary. If you think the U.S. dollar is strong, if you think the U.S. economy is strong, then you do you. But we've been seeing the signs for quite a while, and the U.S. dollar, in our opinion, has been collapsing. So we've made a big investment in gold and silver for a reason, to protect our wealth. Great, it's up 2%. That's great. But what I care about is preservation. So taking $1 and converting it to $1 of gold, and it's sustained for 5,000 years. While Jerome Powell and the Biden administration continue to do what they're going to do, I don't want to be a part of their game. And so our friends at Lear Capital, who support our show, can help you get set up with an IRA where you can actually buy gold and silver inside of a self-directed account if you want to do that. Maybe you've got an old IRA sitting around, you've got an old 401k sitting around, you can actually convert it so you can actually buy precious metals inside of that account. So you can actually call their 800 number, which is right here on your screen. If you go to 1-800-613-3557, you call them, they'll take care of you. Or you can go to their website, learedacted.com. That's the place to go. But also, they're giving away a free ounce of silver for every ounce of gold that you buy right now. And they're doing that through the end of March, I think for the next few weeks. So if you do buy any gold or silver right now, you can actually take advantage of this free promotion right now. So you don't have to buy the gold or silver inside of your IRA. You can buy it outside of it. You can have the gold coins shipped to your house or a safe location offsite, wherever you want to go. You know, again, having it in a safe or a vault somewhere, it's totally up to you. We personally use an offsite vault. That's the most, you know, that's That, and also the liquidity too. Like if you needed to sell stuff quickly, you can do that within a few days. It just makes more sense in our opinion. So check them out. Right now, you can call that 1-800 number, 1-800-613-3557, or go to LearRedacted.com to get your free gold and silver investor guide and get 1 ounce of silver for every ounce of gold that you buy totally free. All right. And I want to thank all of you for subscribing. Did we hit it yet? 1.8 million subscribers. This morning, we were getting close to 1.8 million. We'll have to see here. But so if you do subscribe, your name will pop right up here on the big board. And you can also, so if you subscribe on YouTube, your name will pop up here on the big board. You can also subscribe to us on Rumble, rumble.com/redacted. We're nearing 300,000 subscribers over there. So we hope that we provide value for you on a nightly basis. After all, the show is free, and all that we ask you to do maybe is just to smash that like button and maybe share the show with a friend. It's free, so you don't have to spend any money. Just your time.
We're about 400 away from 1.8.
Okay. All right.
So let's do it today. Come on.
Let's do it. 400. Let's get there.
All right. We remind you, too, that if you subscribe, it doesn't cost you any money. You just hit that subscribe button.
That's right.
And if you like to watch us on Rumble, follow us there, too. We appreciate all views, all eyeballs.
That's right. All right. Let's talk about the banking collapse. What in the world is going on with the banks right now? And we, I think, are about to have a repeat of the 2008 financial collapse in a couple of different ways. But it's going to look a lot different, though, this time. Because this morning, we'll get into some of the details of how it's going to look different. But it is starting to shape up this way. And it's very, very troubling. Fresh signs, though, that the banking collapse is sweeping across the globe, about to hit Europe as well. Of course, this morning, all of the concern in Europe. That's why the stock market today was down 500 points this morning, but it was up 300 points yesterday. We'll get into why that is. But Credit Suisse, of course, a European bank, big concerns that it could sweep across Europe. So I got a question for you, though. Why does the stock market go up 300 points yesterday when the U.S. banks are collapsing? All around it goes up, and then when it goes down 500 points when there's fears of the European banking sector collapsing. Can anybody answer that in the chat? Be curious. We'll kind of maybe come back to you guys, put in your thoughts here. What do you think?
Because the stock market is a perversion.
Yes, it is perverted. The stock market is a perversion. It is perverted. It's artificial. And it's artificially propped up by fake U.S. dollars, right? And so Europe, though, different scenario. And so as the United States is trying to prop up the U.S. economy right now, trying to prop up all of these U.S. banks, Europe is basically saying, and Saudi Arabian investors inside of Credit Suisse were like, no, they don't need help. they're gonna crash on their own. So like what the United States is doing is like bailing out these people who made risky investments and made stupid moves, and Europe right now is like, let them wallow in their own filth, perhaps. We'll see how it shapes out.
Yeah.
But so that's maybe perhaps part of it. We can get into more of this. So we'll try to make our way through this mess. Yesterday, Moody's, though, the ratings agency, downgraded the entire banking system. Watch this announcement.
Moody's cuts outlook on U.S. banking system to negative, not on individual banks, on the system. Citing, and this is a quote, rapidly deteriorating operating environment. That is an understatement, but undoubtedly true.
Yeah, and so on Friday, of course, when this was hitting Silicon Valley Bank, economists who know this very well were saying this is not just going to be isolated. They're all interconnected, and this is going to spread rapidly. Mm-hmm. And then it did to Signature Bank. And it's spreading to other banks. Mm-hmm. And now it's spreading to European banks. Here's how CNN covered. I love the way that they just kind of downplayed this. They're like, it's kind of a big deal, but this is CNN. Watch.
How should we be interpreting Moody's decision now to downgrade the entire banking sector?
Well, it's certainly a sign of continued concern about these banks. Moody's says that they expect that banks are going to continue to remain under pressure for as long as the Federal Reserve hikes interest rates. They're warning they could downgrade 6 U.S. banks, including First Republic Bank, Western Alliance, and Comerica.
So those are the other banks now on that list.
But given that we're corporate backed, we're not going to ask you to panic about it.
Yeah, don't panic. CNBC not panicking. Like, it's amazing to watch CNBC, who No, I mean, I can't believe these guys are still on the air. Like, literally a few weeks ago, Jim Cramer was telling his audience, yeah, there's nothing wrong with Silicon Valley Bank. Go invest in them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's a big, like, kind of mocking Reddit thing where, like, anything Jim Cramer says, you short it. You short what he tells you to buy.
Yeah, you would have been rich.
And yet Wall Street skyrocketed yesterday. 300 points. The Dow Jones up 300 points. The system is rigged for the wealthy. The few who run the show, I mean, look no further than the small regional banks that we covered here yesterday on the show, which are folding up and seeing massive withdrawals. So all these little banks in these little towns drying up, collapsing, and the big banks, where's the money flowing? It's flowing right to the big banks. We knew this was going to happen, and we covered this yesterday, and now we know. Over the past 48 hours, Bank of America, get this, saw record deposits. Record deposits.
From where?
Small banks. People taking their money out of the small banks and putting them into the really big banks, the hegemonic banks, the ones that are totally propped up and in partnership with the Biden administration and the federal government. Look at this.
Basically,
15 billion new deposits, new accounts set up. Bank of America has raked in 15 billion new deposits after the SVB collapse. Go ahead, David.
Well, and they put out these graphics that show all of the negative percentages of all these small banks. And then you see the ones that are still in the green, the Bank of America, the big banks. And you're like, oh, I guess I better put my money there because they're in the green. So it's by design that they do that.
It doesn't change the amount that your account is insured for. The FDIC insurance is still $250,000. So it does not necessarily make you safer. It just makes you feel like you're in a more crowded place.
Well, you know what's funny about the FDIC thing you bring up is that it's now $250,000 that you're protected, right? Quote unquote protected. But now it's infinite. Because what the Biden administration just did was basically say $250,000 isn't, that's not a real number anymore.
Now
they're bailing out all of these people that had much bigger deposits.
Yeah.
So it is no longer $250,000.
In fact, by some reports, the Meghan Markles of the world had their accounts there.
Yeah, Gavin Newsom had his account with Silicon Valley Bank.
I'm going to say I think she probably had more than $250,000.
And so did Gavin Newsom. And so did these other people.
Yeah.
So Gavin Newsom was out there championing this bailout because he didn't disclose to his audiences and his voters that he actually is a big customer of Silicon Valley Bank. So yeah, these guys, $250,000 is no longer the threshold. And by the way, that was increased after the 2008 collapse. It was $100,000.
Oh.
So now it's up to $250,000. But now it's infinite. So these are artificial fake numbers. Of course, and you know, people are laid off. Facebook laying off 10,000 people. All of these tech companies laying
off. Tyson Chicken today laying off 1,500, I think, was the number.
You can't keep track of all of them. Let us know in the chat, like, if you know of other companies that are laying people off right now. So what's happening again, it's like lockdown 2.0, 2008 in a different light. We're seeing the same thing. A collapse of the banking system that is now being propped up by the Biden administration, not letting it to collapse. What they should have done in the United States is allow Silicon Valley Bank to collapse. Like, I'm sorry. You make risky investments. You bet big on these things. And they should be allowed to have their natural course of things and die off, right? And then you don't prop them up.
But,
I was going to say, at the core, they're already propped up anyway because the whole system is a sham because it's not even real money. And they have all these rules. They can do fractional banking, and for every dollar, they can loan out 10. It's like that whole system from the core is flawed. And how can you not do what they're doing in that environment?
Right. I mean, the big criticism of 2008 was that they never allowed it to actually collapse.
Yes.
Right? It never allowed it to get it out of its system. Like, if you have a sickness or an illness, it's like taking Imodium instead of actually going to the bathroom, right?
It
blocks you up. You shouldn't use that crap, right? You should actually just get it out of your system. And in 2008, we never got it out of our system. We blocked it up.
Yeah.
The Fed added trillions to its balance sheet. And now we've added another $7 trillion to our balance sheet to block and take care of all of these deposits. We're never going to get it out of our system until we see the ultimate depression and collapse.
Yeah, I saw a financial expert the other day saying that if you have anything more than $250,000 in any given bank, you know, it's ignorant at this point, because how long can the United States guarantee that?
You can't. And that's why we're so big advocates on gold and silver and precious metals
and real estate. Or any performing asset.
Yeah, because You do not want it tied to this banking system. So we are likely, you know, stocks are going higher because interest rate hikes are not supposed to happen anymore. This is why stocks in the United States were up yesterday. Oh, the banking system is collapsing. But now the Fed, which was going to raise interest rates, is no longer probably going to raise interest rates like they were planning on in March. So now the stock market is like, oh, this is exciting. Layoffs, great, because that's better, right? Layoffs are great for the stock market. No interest rate hikes, great for the stock market. So these things are completely out of whack.
No, but CNBC is telling you this morning, hey, this might mean you can get back into the housing market because we don't see interest rates going back up. So this could be good for you.
Well, and housing's going up today. We're seeing housing going up, right? The demand is there. So this is why I'm saying it's not like 2008 in that way. And this is how it's different. Yeah. You're seeing like these different machinations of how this is coming together. In 2008, the housing market collapsed, fake mortgages, all of this. This time, the housing demand is off the charts. So housing is going up. Interest rates are going down, right? Now that they can't increase interest rates, the banking system is totally propped up with fake money. So, I don't know how you continue to do this. People are being laid off. The value of your dollar is going down. So your rent is going up. You can't pay for gas. Mm-hmm. With the same amount of money that you had. We saw the meme today about the $3 hash brown. Did you guys see this? People are online like freaking out that like in California, I guess it costs $3 to get a McDonald's hash brown.
California's insane. I was just there visiting my dad not too long ago, and I paid $25 for a Chipotle bowl. I did like...
I was like, oh, and when she texted me that, I'm like, did you buy it for four people?
No, it was one bowl. I mean, I did want the steak and I did get the guacamole and the queso. Like I wanted all of it, but I never expected it for one Chipotle bowl.
That's crazy.
$25.
Well, you know what? The whole thing that gets me is that they keep propping it up with fake money. So it's all an illusion. But that illusion makes people think everything is okay. And it's like every time the reality of the situation comes to hand and everybody's like, oh my gosh, we're freaking out, things are going wrong, they fake inflate it and be like, okay, everything's fine, the stock market is up, yeah, everything's fine. But it's actually worse.
It would be responsible of CNN to say, yeah, that seems bad. It kind of indicates that our banking system is hanging by a thread. Maybe we should all do a little better at financial education. But instead, they're just like, well, that's how it is. Next story.
Yeah, just add another zero.
Right.
So Credit Suisse, take a look at this chart. So Credit Suisse plunging as this bank storm is spreading to Europe. That's the wrong chart. Keep that one up for a second if you would, Philip. So this is the rate change expectation. So the reason that we're seeing this, okay, the expectation that the Fed is going to increase rates again now after this banking collapse, the expectation that they're going to increase interest rates has plummeted, right? So now they're all no concern about that. So this is why the stock market is up. The Fed had planned to increase these interest rates, but now they're not because, well, they need to bail out all these other people right now. So we're not going to do that. That's not on our plans. So this morning, we're now seeing the effects spilling over to Europe. So I just want to talk about the Europe piece of this for a second here, because here's the thing. The U.S. would love nothing more than for the European Union to be weakened, right? Even further than it already is. We blow up your pipeline so that you have an energy crisis, and we're trying to devalue the euro so that the US dollar continues to rise. This is what we do. We want to devalue the euro through anything, economic warfare basically is what we're doing. And the US would love nothing more. And they're on the record about saying this, by the way. It's all written down. We even ran through the entire RAND report on exactly how we would actually weaken the euro. This is one of our biggest problems right now, is a strong euro against a weakening U.S. dollar.
Has been for a long time.
So they can't have a strong euro. They don't want a strong euro. And that hurts the U.S. dollar would be hurt in that situation. And it's already under siege from Russia and China. So here's Credit Suisse today. This is the Wall Street Journal just a few minutes ago. Credit Suisse plunges as bank storm spreads to Europe. Look at that chart and see... they're on the bottom, Credit Suisse plummeting, yes, right? And BNP Paribas, Societad General, UBS, Deutsche Bank, all of them going down. And
isn't Deutsche Bank one of the ones where a lot of these elites hold their money? That's like a very elitist bank, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it came under scrutiny around President Trump and his business deals. Yes.
Yes, it does. And it's also worth pointing out here that Saudi Arabia is Credit Suisse's largest shareholder. Did you know that? So this would be unbelievable 1-2 punch for the United States. Punch them in the stomach and in the balls. The United States can weaken both Europe and Saudi Arabia simultaneously, right, with this move.
That's what you get for going to China.
Right. Oh, yeah. Saudi
That's
Arabia.
What you get for...
You want to cozy up with Xi Jinping? Yeah, we're going to punch you right in the nuts with this. So we've just weakened their hand tremendously in this situation. Credit Suisse under pressure, the stock market. And, you know, by the way, Saudi Arabia is like, well, we're not going to funnel any money, more money into the bank to prop it up. So we don't like, we're not going to do that. So we'll see what happens to Credit Suisse and the collapse in Europe. The stock market should have collapsed, but in the United States, but it didn't on this news.
You know what the difference, though, with some of those countries, especially like Saudi Arabia? They actually hold gold. They hold a lot of gold. Mm. Our gold reserves, nobody knows where they are. We don't even know if we still have any gold.
You're right.
And China does too, yeah.
Which president was it that ran on that their major platform was that they wanted to count the gold in Fort Knox?
Truman.
Truman got into office, you know, in January, completed the audit by April and said, we did it. We think there's this much. They released a press release and that was it. According to the press release, most of the auditors never even touched the gold. They touched about 10% of it and made an estimate. And the people who had done those audits were not even experts in that. And they considered it a done deal with just one press release, even though that was his major campaign promise, was to actually get in and see it all. And there was some power that did not want that to happen. And sort of the mainstream press dropped it. Because Truman dropped it.
Yeah.
Well, and recently we had the whole thing with Germany, or one of those countries wanting their gold that we're supposed to have in reserve. And it's like, well, we don't have it. So, and then that story just disappeared. Like and, we talked about it and then it was.
Yeah.
Americans were outlawed from owning gold. And a lot of Europeans got wealthy by buying it up in the United States because of that.
But that's going to be the advantage for those other countries because they still hold gold. They still have, I mean, they have gold currency.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, and you know, the closest gold-backed big currency in the world is the Russian ruble. Not technically tied to the gold standard, it is as close as any other currency is in the world is the Russian ruble to a gold standard. Not technically, but very, very close. So, anyway, put the pin in that. We're going to continue to watch what's happening with Credit Suisse. We'll continue to watch what's happening with the stock market. You know, this morning down 500 points and in these weird mood swings. But I think the reason they're largely down by 500 points is seeing what's happening in Europe. But 500 points is nothing these days. Back in the day, 500 points was like, oh my God, that's like Black Monday or whatever on the stock market, right? 1987 or was it Black Monday? Black Friday.
Yeah.
Black Monday, right? Like disaster. Oh my God. Now it's like, that's one afternoon. Who cares? 300 points, 700 points. Who cares?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's all artificial. All right. We've got more news to get to here on your Wednesday. We're going to talk about what's going on with Pfizer and the fleecing of Europe, talking about the fleecing of Europe. So we've got to talk about that. And why don't we? Let's talk about Pfizer because this criminal organization needs some accounting.
Well, yes, Pfizer does not want to let go of those euros. They're offering the European Union this great deal. Continue to pay us for COVID vaccines that we won't ship or make.
Okay, so I'm going to provide you a service, right? I'm a house cleaner. You continue to pay me, but I'm not going to clean your house.
Basically, that's the deal.
That's a great deal.
This is according to reporting from the Financial Times, who say they spoke with two people familiar with the deal because there was a meeting in Europe of European Union nations this week where they were presented with a renewed contract for the Pfizer vaccine for COVID vaccines. And apparently, most of the European nations in that meeting freaked out because the deal involves paying for vaccines that they may never get because demand is down. Here is, according to the Financial Times, it says the U.S. pharmaceutical company has agreed to extend its contract from 2023, because it expires this year, to 2026, according to two people with knowledge of the talks. But it is insisting on payment for doses ordered in the contract that will never be manufactured. Angering some governments. Well, I wouldn't like that either. That makes me kind of mad if I were going to pay for things that I may never need. There's no like on demand, like, hey, we think that in the next quarter we're going to use 50, so we'll pay for 50. No, you need to pay for the same amount. They want to sell the same volumes of vaccines that they sold the first time around, even though demand is down, according to the Times. As the severity of the pandemic has waned, it has left the EU committed to paying for unneeded vaccines. About 82% of adults in the bloc have received at least two jabs, and more than 1.7 billion doses have been delivered. Contracts were concluded with eight vaccine developers, providing as many as 4.2 billion doses. So the European Union had to pay for 4.2 billion but only used less than 2 billion. It says COVID manufacturers, vaccine manufacturers such as Pfizer, are struggling to generate sales on the same scale as at the height of the pandemic. Are we supposed to feel sorry for them for this last bit? I'm struggling with empathy. So the EU has been paying all along for those 4.2 billion doses, and they didn't even use half of that. How, again, did this crappy deal come together, actually? How did we get stuck with this
deal? Wouldn't we all like to know?
Oh, yes. Ursula von der Leyen's text messages. That's right. The New York Times found out that she sealed a deal with Pfizer's Albert Bourla over personal texts in order to secure all of these vaccines for the European Union. The Financial Times says that this was a big triumph for the European Union when it happened in 2020. Here's how they spin it. The European Commission claimed a triumph in 2020, meaning it was going to pay for twice the vaccines it needed, when it corralled all 27 member states into a joint contract to order these vaccines before researchers had them approved. So not only did they triumph by ordering twice the amount they needed, they triumphed by forcing the hand of all 27 nation states. Why? Because some nation states don't want a deal like this again. Because the question when I'm asking why is like, why is that even a deal? If 27 nation states says that they're in on something that they can't get out of and may not even want anymore. In fact, Poland, according to the Times, and these four countries released a statement today, Poland, Bulgaria, Hungary, and Lithuania, their statement said this: in our opinion, these proposals do not present a fair and final solution to the problems of the COVID-19 vaccine surplus and do not meet the needs of the healthcare systems, the needs of citizens, and the financial interests of the member states. The four said the commission should negotiate a better contract or buy doses from member states that do not want them and donate them overseas. Austria also says it's unhappy with this deal. And in fact, I mentioned this earlier in the show. Hang on just one second, because I think this is a bomb. I'm about to drop, is that Poland didn't even pay for their deliveries, and they asked for them to stop last year because of a force majeure. Take a look at this. Warsaw claimed force majeure last year and has not accepted or paid for any deliveries since. This happened last May. Poland Health Minister Adam... No, I'm not going to try that. Do you want to try that last name?
No.
Niedzielski.
I apologize. Said that the deal favored pharmaceutical companies, not EU citizens. And he also demanded that the confidential contract be published. So this is all being negotiated in private. And they're saying, no, we can't do this anymore. Let's see it. And let's negotiate what's best for everybody. Go ahead, David.
Well, really quick, what is the definition of force majeure? What does that actually mean?
Okay, so a force majeure is when you have a contract between two entities. There's usually a clause that says that if something that is a force of nature, an unexpected force of nature that gets in our way, that means that one party to the contract cannot perform, then it lets you out of it. So, like, there's a... let's say I was going to give a concert to play the ukulele and a hurricane came and I couldn't give that concert. I wouldn't be able to be sued by the concert promoters because of the force majeure.
Gotcha.
So,
and then I also had another question about that. I feel like nobody is talking about, like, don't the vaccines have to be refrigerated at a certain temperature. Now they're saying they have a surplus. Like, don't they have to store those in some kind of refrigeration? And then we're talking about shipping them around and donating them to other countries. Don't they have to maintain a certain temperature to even, and even in that temperature, don't they have a shelf life?
They do. And so this would necessitate some logistics that seem like would also be expensive. So that's a good point. Now, about this force majeure, though, what is Poland claiming was a force majeure? Because there was not a hurricane or an earthquake in that region or anything else. Well, they're saying that the conflict between Ukraine and Russia necessitates a force majeure in their contract. The European Union is saying, no, you can't claim that. And it's interesting because the Western media keeps telling us Poland's doing just fine. Poland absolutely wants to keep supporting Ukraine. Poland is not having a refugee crisis. We know that's not true. We've presented that on the show. Poland is saying something different. Here is the article last May when they have invoked this force majeure to get out of their obligations to Pfizer and Moderna. And the European Union is now fighting that in court and saying, no, you can't claim this. But they have not paid or accepted any since then. And
yeah, they're saying we don't have a refugee crisis. We're fine. And this is like the great scam, right? We've covered it here on the show. My group has been on the show where we've talked about the refugee crisis where you like it is now a Ukrainian country in many ways. You go into he's like, when you walk through Warsaw, when you walk through these little towns that heretofore you would just hear Polish, now you hear Ukrainian. Like millions of Ukrainians living in Poland now and permanently now going to be living there. So how the services being able to provide for these people, the answer is they can't. It's being crushed under the weight of this.
Right. Well, here's what they say. Take a look. Poland invoked the force majeure clause in the contract with Pfizer. I didn't know that there even was one. In the wake of the war in Ukraine, which saw an influx of about 3 million Ukrainian refugees in the country. So apparently, in this contract that was negotiated by Ursula von der Leyen's DMs, there was a force majeure clause. Now, the European Union and the European Commission is saying this doesn't qualify. You can't claim it. And they're going to fight it in court. But if they succeed, other European countries that are receiving an influx of Ukrainian refugees may be able to use this to get out of their contracts because it would seem there is no other way. Take a look at this. The Financial Times is saying that countries that do not sign up this renewed plan to pay for vaccines you don't get, if they don't sign up, they remain locked in the original contract terms. That seems like you can't get out of it, period. So they're screaming like, renegotiate the deal, and they're saying, we're not gonna, and you'll be locked in this anyway.
It's like Goodfellas. It's like the pharmaceutical industry is the top of the mob thing, and then the European, like these leaders are like, you know, F you, pay me. You don't like this? F right. you, pay me. You want yeah. this? F you, pay me.
Yeah, yeah. We'll shake you down. Like, we'll give you protection. Yeah. Like, you better pay us, though. You better pay us.
I mean, everybody should have a sweet deal like this. You need to get yourself a lawyer that can, you know, negotiate you a deal like Ursula von der Leyen. We may never know exactly how that went down, although we may soon know how that came about because the New York Times is suing the European Commission for her texts because they want to see it. They're claiming freedom of information. They want to know how this went down. They continue to chase this story, although the EU has faced requests for these before but claimed that the text messages may have been deleted due to their short-lived, ephemeral nature.
Mm. Really? Huh.
Yeah.
You know, this just gave me a brilliant
text. Yeah.
This just gave me a brilliant marketing plan. I think what I'm going to do later today is I'm going to go to the redacted store and I'm just going to get a bunch of random addresses and send a bunch of stuff COD.
Okay. That's
just
how
start
we'll
sending out things to our viewers COD. You don't pay, you know.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
I mean, that's basically what they're doing. Deal. Yeah. Well, let us know what you think about that in the chat. I'm definitely interested in this, how this contract's going to go down. But I'm really interested in what's going to happen with Poland being able to claim a force majeure because of a war, because all of Europe should be able to do that.
Right. Yeah. And oh, by the way, we don't have a refugee crisis, but here on paper, we're admitting that we have millions of refugees.
Yeah.
Like you've been lying about it. And now here it is in this contract.
Right.
It's amazing. Well, we do have a redacted store. David mentioned it. And we've got a limited time shirt right now that will only last through the end of March. And it's our anti-war shirt. It says, silence is complicity. So you can see it right here. You go to redactedstore.com, and you can get your redacted merchandise. But there you can see the great new shirt, which is silence equals complicity. So if you stay silent when we're pushing for more war, that is you know, be going along with the herd and continuing to push for more war. But we've got other stuff there as well. New hats, new mugs, tumblers, everything else you can get. And you can support independent journalism by going to redactedstore.com. Redactedstore.com is the place to go. And stuff is really, really comfortable. The polos
yeah,
are
I just
really comfortable and the shirt and the
really hoodie. Quick. Yeah, it is. I got the hoodie right back here, and I was wearing the hat earlier, but I'm trying to, you know, look a little bit more presentable. I got my redacted shirt on under here.
Nice.
You can see the redacted logo. But thank you to everybody who has purchased that shirt. There's been a ton of orders. Thank you. I can't wait to see you. Once you get them, we need you to send pictures.
Yes, so send us your photos. If you order any redacted merch, send us your photos, and we'll try to show them here on the show. You can send them to our email, which is photos... at redacted.inc, not .com, it's .inc. So photos at redacted.inc. So after you order some and you wear it, take a good photo. We would love to see you guys in the limited time shirt right now.
That reminds me, there was someone who tagged us in a photo of them with their redacted water bottle. And I forgot to respond to that. If that was you, I loved it. I'm going to find it in my Twitter feed. Thank you so much.
All right. But yeah, so please send your photos. Grab your redacted merch at the store and then send us your photos and we will share it here on the show. So photos at redacted.inc.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for us today. Make sure you like and subscribe wherever it is you're listening, wherever it is you're watching, whatever that platform calls it. Just do that, please. And be back here tomorrow. We will see you at 4 p.m. Eastern. Bye, everyone.
It's a business.